You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. And globally at WPVMFM.org.
Well, howdy, buckaroos and buckarettes.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Mostly clear skies as we wrap up the weekend. Lows going down to around 60 after reaching the lower 80s. Gradually becoming sunny on Monday with highs near 66. Wind gusts near 25 miles per hour. Partly cloudy for Monday night. Still breezy at times. Lows around 37. Clouds and sun on Tuesday. The high near 60. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
When systems fail, where do you turn for truth and resilience? Welcome to the Resilience Realm with host Dawn Westmoreland, a syndicated radio talk show host, retired Air Force veteran, author, and resilience advocate. Each week, Dawn brings powerful voices, attorneys, mental health experts, veterans, and leaders sharing courage, boundaries, and real-world resilience strategies. Dawn broadcasts on the Pacifica Network and WPVM-FM LP 103.7 Radio Asheville. This isn't just a show. It's a movement for courage, ethics, and justice. Tune in Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. If it's your first time, we also welcome you. Today, I have Tina Siemens. Tina, where are you at? What city are you in right now?
Good morning. And yes, I'm in Seminole, Texas. That is West Texas, where the tumbleweeds roll and the wind blows.
West Texas. Okay. One thing I learned about you, and our show is all about resiliency and courage, is that you were an immigrant and some of the challenges that you had to go through. I think that's a really appropriate and timely subject to talk about in today's, you know, what's going on in our world. There's people that are all for immigration. There's people who are not for immigration. So I can imagine yet you've had different challenges. Would you share with our audience a little bit about you?
Well, thank you for having me on. And what a privilege to talk about how resilience was gifted in our pathway over and over again through the journey of immigration. So my family immigrated in 1977. We were one of the first Mennonite families in West Texas. And I was born in Chihuahua, Mexico. And so I was about eight. And there, I've given you my age. But I was an eight-year-old that was just so excited for a new land. But once we got here, I had not had a perception of the challenges that were lying ahead for us. So we came across the border and with difficulties at the border because the immigration attorney that was supposed to meet us there never showed up. And so we did get a six-month visa. And with that visa, we came over and we got an extension every time before the date was up. And there were times they sent us deportation notices. And then by this and this date, we were supposed to be out. And then we got an extension again. And so it was a five-year journey back and forth before we were finally able to say that now we are green card holders. And then in 1986, October 31st, we became U.S. citizens. And so that was a journey that was just so, it was a journey that was difficult, but it also held so many joys. I remember we were out in the cotton field in the summer, and all the money that we did not use for bare necessity of living, we would have to give to continue the immigration journey, paying the attorneys and just getting our paperwork to and from. And so we would work long, 12 to 14 hours on the in the West Texas hot, dry cotton fields. And so I would get blisters. And one day I remember I was in the bathtub crying with such blisters on my neck. And Dad knocks on the bathroom door and he asks, Tina, what's wrong? And I said, I can't wash my neck. It hurts so bad. the red sand and the blisters. And he was quiet for a bit, and he said, Tina, if you'll wash up right quick, we can go to the grocery store and we can get some ice cream. And just like that, I washed my myself, I finished bathing, and I was out of there. And we went to a local store called Piggly Wiggly. And that grocery store, we got a gallon of ice cream, a bucket, a plastic bucket of ice cream. And Dad said, you don't even have to put it in bowls. Just get some spoons. So I remember having that gallon of ice cream in the middle of the table and all of us just eating out of the gallon. And it was devoured.
Oh, my God.
But we were six of us siblings plus Mom and Dad. So I don't think Mom and Dad got much ice cream, but we children devoured with such glee and joy to having that abundance of ice cream. So those are the good times. But yes, it was a difficult journey. And would I do it over again? Absolutely, if it needed to be done. But I'm so grateful for the opportunities that this country has afforded me.
Wow. I'm just curious myself, what flavor of ice cream did you get?
It was vanilla.
I like vanilla too. What a story. Now, we hear today about the tragedies and the hardships of people trying to come over here and immigrate. What kept y'all persevering? Because that's a long time to get approved to be a U.S. citizen.
It was a short time then compared to what it is today. I know of people that have waited for 25, 30 years. And still have not been approved. But I think it was just such a drive in my parents to make a better living for their family. And this place offered that opportunity and they took it. And I'm so grateful for that, because if we would have stayed in Mexico, it was before they found out that corn was really good if it was irrigated. Back then, the irrigation wells hadn't been dug like they are today. They've been able to do very well for themselves that stayed in Mexico. But at the time, my parents just did not have a way out to feed their family and to stay afloat. So it was a survival mechanism for them to make the move. And if I think of being mid-30s, with five children, having two more after they got here, so we're seven of us siblings. If I put myself in my parents' shoes, it would have been so daunting, not knowing the language, not knowing the culture, not knowing the atmosphere. Like climate-wise, it was similar to Mexico, but there was so many unknowns. We didn't know about washers and dryers. We had those old Maytag washers with the battery operated, or we would on the washboard in Mexico. When we get to the motel here, Mom's washing our clothes by hand and putting them out to dry on the bushes in front of our motel room. And the owner said, that's not allowed. You cannot put your clothes on the bushes to dry, but that's all Mom knew. She had a wash line, so she dried all of our clothes outside.
Yeah.
And so then here he comes and says, no, very upset with Mom. And of course, this is Main Street, USA, right? And having these dresses on the bushes drying, like every bush that was out in front of the motel rooms had a dress or an outfit on drying in the sun. And so he then came and said, I've got a laundry mat. And he showed Mom and Dad the room that had the washer and dryer. And we kids were just fascinated to see that washer, be so hungry for those quarters. So it was, we were learning. When Dad, let me back up just a little bit. Before we immigrated, Dad came here for a couple of weeks to just kind of feel out the land and look for prospects of, could we find work here? And he came back to Mexico and he said to my mom, and I will always remember this. He said, the women don't have to do dishes. They have machines that do dishes. And they're dogs. They have little houses. They have dog houses out there. Like, he just made it sound like this was the land of milk and honey, which it was. God. But as we continued working, my mom, we were cleaning a house for somebody, and their puppy had puppies. Their little dog had puppies. And the woman said, don't clean the master bedroom. And we just, because their puppy was having puppies. And so the mom looked in the bedroom, and there was such a mess. Everywhere. And then mom closes the door, and she said, not everything that looks like gold is gold in America. So we had, amongst our hardships, we found joy. We found things that we could laugh about, or things that would just bring that smile. This is the way Americans do things. But when I started school, our bus driver was, his name was Mr. Love. How appropriate, Mr. Love. So he was so loving. We didn't know a word in English. So we started that first year in public school, and he took us from the bus to our hallways and to our classrooms. And I remember holding his hand and saying, just kind of skipping, because I couldn't understand a word anybody was saying, but the love. So I get to my classroom, and my teacher takes me by the hand, and she takes me to the back of the classroom, demonstrate, this is the sink, and this is where you wash your hands. And then one morning, there's three boys that, and if I think of what I must have looked like in my homemade dress, my braids, my hair up in braids, all pinned up, it was a sight to see. These kids had never been exposed to somebody being of so different. So they made fun of me. They spat on me. They kicked me on the playground. And I just crunched down and I just cried. Like, this is hard. I can't understand them. I don't know their ways. That I saw them play their games, but I didn't know how to play those games. And so I waited till everyone was inside and before I went, and I tried not to cry. I wiped my tears. I come into my classroom. Everyone's seated already. As soon as I sit down, my teacher calls my name. And that was the only thing I understood. And then she motioned for me to come. And I lost it. I cried all over. I'm in trouble. I shouldn't have cried. She opens the door to the hallway, and there stand all those three boys. And she gives them a swat in front of me. So she showed me, I've got your back. I've got your back. And that's how we learned, by literally being taken by the hand. And them repeating it, we heard these sounds, and that is how we started building our vocabulary. And then when we could learn a few words, then we were able to start recognizing the books, our lessons and stuff. So we learned the language, and I'm still learning the language, by the way. But it was just a journey that afforded us so much joy, because we were able to make a living. My dad worked 18 hours a day during the summer. We couldn't start school when school started, because the farm work was still available. And then we couldn't end when school was, because we would be taken out before. So we were working. All of us were working and bringing in an income. And that allowed us to see that there's a dawn coming. There's a silver lining in the future if we keep pressing on.
Now, I'm curious, and maybe our listeners are curious, when you came over to America and didn't have a lot of money, and I'm going to add in that I grew up in the second poorest county in Florida, so I know what it's like not to have a lot of money. What were the fun things that you did that didn't cost anything or didn't cost much? I mean, how did you stay entertained?
Well, if you'll read my books, you'll read the story that I had gotten a doll in Mexico the Christmas before we moved in March of 1977. And so we came over, two families in a single cab pickup with a camper shell and a hired driver. It wasn't even our trucks. The dad hired this gentleman that had the pickup with a camper shell. So he's driving. My mom and Mrs. Schmidt are both sitting up front with a two-year-old on their lap. So there's five people in the cab. Seatbelt rules were not enforced, apparently. And then both fathers and eight of us kids were in the camper shell. Now, that can give you an idea of there was no room for extras. We had the clothes on our back and one extra change. And then the only thing that I valued that I could bring with me were my little sandals. And that is why my children's book is called The Little Sandals That Could. And so we come here and I didn't have any dishes, any little toys. We had nothing. So we would play with in the dirt, making houses. Like nowadays, the little girls have little playhouses and all the dolls that they can dream of. We didn't have that. So we would look around, just walk around after we rented our first place. I would gather broken jars of glass. And that was my beautiful China dishes. In my eyes, that was my dishes for my playing days. And I would make dolls from a washcloth. I would roll it up and that was my baby dolls. And all the meanwhile, always waiting for that doll to be brought over from Mexico, which never happened. But joys of having a small butter or margarine containers. I've always liked small stuff, petite stuff, and I would just gather rocks and little stones and butter containers, like just anything to entertain ourselves with. And so we weren't spoiled, and that made it easier, because if we would have had a lot and not be able to continue, that would have been harder. But we didn't have anything, so anything that we did get was a plus. But that first Easter, Dad had given the last of our money for the month's rent. And we didn't even get a candy. And I saw other kids have candy and how jealous I was. I wanted to be adopted by these families that were able to buy candy. It was those small treats that we did have. But then on the flip side, there wasn't hardly anything. But I think we learned to appreciate once we were able to buy a few things. They just meant so much, like the gallon of ice cream. Mm. And after school in the public school system, if I could find a dime, or if mom, dad would give me a dime, I could go get an ice cream cone from the cafeteria after school. Those were the highlights in my life in those days.
I bet that was very special. Now, what are you doing these days? You've grown up and you have a family now and you're in West Texas. And I've lived in Texas twice. It is such an interesting state because you can go in any direction. It feels like you're in a whole different state. It's just, you got the hill country, I was living up in North Texas where summertime you'd have holes in the ground. I mean, where the clay would separate. And I'm like, wow. And I remember the seatbelt once touching me in a Texas sun and it touched my bare arm. And I remember just screaming because it was so bloody hot. Tina, what are you up to these days? You're obviously very resilient, very courageous. Your family, oh my gosh, your dad, he just sounds absolutely delightful. Your whole family does. I mean, you've hung in there together. And I really, really salute you for that. That's not easy. But what are you up to these days? Because I know you have a museum in West Texas, and I know a few things about you, but our listeners, not yet.
Well, thank you. I got married in 1988 to the love of my life, and we've been married going on 38 years this year. And we've got two sons and four, they're both married, lovely daughter-in-laws, and then four grand-loves, two granddaughters and two grandsons. And we all live very close to each other. And so we raise chickens and we have some horses. So just so many joys. But then my dream and my love has always been history, genealogy, and just knowing where are our roots? Where do you come from? So I've thrived on that since I was 5 years old. I remember asking my grandma, she was really sick. And I said, Grandma, if you die, can these two old antique chairs that you brought from Canada to Mexico, can those be mine? I was 5 years old. I did not get those chairs. But I remember, like, early on, I loved history. And so for 20 years, I dreamt of having a museum. And the county museum is so landlocked, they couldn't have more exhibits added to it. And so my publicist, our friend Cyrus Webb, he said, Tina, if you're not invited to somebody else's table, then set your own. And so
Cyrus.
I was just like, there were so many confirmations that I needed to follow my dream. So 20 years, I've been gathering antiques and just storing them away. And between Christmas and New Year of 2022, I was on my knees praying, Lord, if it is your will that I can open the museum in 2023, then let me find the building. That was all that I thought was standing in the way for me to open the museum. I had the blueprints ready. I had the acreage that I needed, but the money was not there to purchase. I want 40 acres to build my ideal museum with outdoor gardening areas, because I love to teach how to do things the way our grandparents did it. The beef canning, the butter making, the milling of your own grains, like all these classes that I do teach at the museum now. I want to do it in a bigger scale for the next generations to learn how to sustain themselves with whole food. And so I had this plan with garden area and a commercial kitchen and just big plans. And so I was praying. And as I was praying, the Lord told me, you already have the building.
Just oh, my. Yeah.
And we had moved out of that. It was about 6,000 square feet. We had moved out of that. It had been a day spot. It was an office complex. It was our airplane hangar at one time. It was like this building had so many uses. Mm-hmm. And I get this through God downloading it through that prayer. And I go to my husband and say, what do you think? I just had this idea of opening the museum right here in this building. And he said, go for it. So that by June of 23, I had my grand opening of the West Texas Living Heritage Museum. And it was just such a dream come true. And I've had people from around the world. I had a whole bus full from Germany that came, Canada, Mexico, South America. I've had people coming through those doors, different ethnic groups. And it's just been such a joy for me to not only be able to speak of where we come from, but who we are, where are our roots? And I just encourage people to find out where their roots are from. What did your grandma and grandpa, what did your ancestors, how did they persevere? What did they do through certain times of difficulties? And I've been able to glean so much traveling where my ancestors came from. They came from the Netherlands, and then to Poland, and then to Ukraine, from Ukraine to Canada, Canada to Old Mexico, and then to here. Like, that's many years of migrations and of learning new languages, of learning new ways of doing life. And so the museum is just such a big part of my life today. I love to write. I'm an author of 3 books and a co-author of several. And so my life is just so blessed. And
yeah, Tina, let me jump in real quick. Where are your books? And talk about your books. I mean, how many books do you have right now? Where can the listeners find them if they want to check them out?
Well, I have 3 that I've authored myself and then co-authored several, but they are on my website. If they go to heritagebytina.com, Heritage by Tina, And they are on Amazon, available in audio as well as in Kindle and paperback. Nice. And then they message me directly, and then I will send them mail them a signed copy.
Oh, really? Yes, that's pretty fantastic. Yes. So I wanted to ask you this, because you've been through a lot of trials, and, you know, we could call it traumas, or we could even call it, you know, because I've been trained as a coach, life coach, opportunities, even if it seems rough. What would you suggest to the person who's trying to become, you know, an immigrant who's trying to come to the United States today? Because you know what you went through, and you're telling me earlier that it takes even more time. What kind of hope, inspiration, or education would you want to share?
I would say, first of all, and most importantly, do it legally. Do it legally. And if you got somebody that can sponsor you, that is here, that's one way. There's many different ways. So work with an immigration attorney and do it legally and do it prayerfully, because this is a land of opportunity, but it also, even heaven has boundaries, right? Even like every land, every society has boundaries. And so if those who desire to reach the American dream, I would just encourage them to do it legally and to not give up. My subtitle of my first book, Seminole, is Some People Never Give Up. If it doesn't work the first try, then sit down and pray about it, reevaluate, and see if there's another way. But I would just encourage, we were so blessed. We have been so blessed. And Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That is the key to everything that we do in life, is to do it with our faith and then not to give up. If one way doesn't work, doesn't mean, I often say that a no today is maybe a yes tomorrow. If we look at the different ways that can, and then be positive about it. Like if you look at the cup halfway empty instead of halfway full, then we would have, my family would have often said, this is just too hard. I can't do it anymore. But with determination, things can be achieved. And I'm just living proof that dreams do come true. And I'm so excited for what's to come.
Well, you are such an inspiration. What's the message you would like to get out to the world? Because we are a syndicated radio talk show with Pacifica. We've got over 200 radio stations out there in the United States, Canada, and the Virgin Islands. To the people who are listening in, and they may not be immigrants, they might just be somebody that doesn't understand immigration. What kind of advice? We've got just a minute.
If you've fallen, forgive yourself and get back up and go again. There's people that fall many, many times. They fail at things. Find your purpose. Get your identity. Who are you? What were you meant to be? Because once we do our purpose, why we were born, then things are not work. They are a joy. They come naturally. So things that you don't have to work hard at, that's what your purpose is in life. Pursue that. Don't try to mimic somebody else's success. Create your own and never give up.
Never give up. Okay. So anybody who would like to get a hold of you, contact you to communicate with you, or they want to see the museum, could you share the addresses, the contact information that you want to provide?
Yes, it's all on my website at heritagebytina.com. So go to the website and you'll find all of the information and the hours of the museum. It's all on my website. And looking forward to having y'all come. Anyone's welcome to just come enjoy and see what we do. Watch the website. There's lots of classes coming up. So many, many fun things.
Now, don't you do some canning in your store, in your museum? I don't know if you have a tour inside the museum, but you do canning, right?